Kairi Mai, Cassandra Kailaho, and you're listening to Safe and Sound, New Zealand's animal rights radio show, broadcasting across this beautiful country of ours via the Access radio sector. Every week we bring you a new topic, a new interview, a new discussion that examines an aspect of animal rights or animal welfare and includes biodiversity. One topic we haven't yet covered in the 120 or so shows that we've done to date is the potentially very cruel crossbow hunting, which Paul Judge has been investigating. Paul's in the studio with me, and we'll chat about that in just a moment. First, though, I'd like to tell you about our sponsor's featured product this week. It's Masala King Herb and Spice Simmer Gravies. Basically a ready-mixed product with whole herbs and spices and, of course, no preservatives. And it's full of antioxidants. There's no frying or sautéing needed with this product. You simply add your vegetables, your dal or your lentils, together with the simmer gravy mix and some water, and it does all the rest. Easy peasy. So Village Organics also offer a delicious vegan dal mix for a quick and nutritious snack. And they sell that by the cup for $5. That's apparently very popular with their customers. So if you're local and you haven't checked out our sponsors yet, head down to Village Organics in Commerce Street, opposite Hotel Frankton. Paul, just before we talk about bow and arrow hunting, I know one of your many interests is climate change and the threat, the real threat it poses to us unless we can begin to take it more seriously. It was in the news this week, wasn't it, in terms of another letter written by scientists?
Yes, that would be the Union of Concerned Scientists that wrote a letter originally in 1992. It was signed by 17,000 scientists. This is an American organisation. And they've just released a second letter 25 years later, warning.
Not enough done.
Well, there's just not enough been done to address the serious threat that climate change is posing. And, of course, you know, even the Pope himself the other day said, you know, he denounced humans for causing climate change and not respecting God's creation and so on. And I think he's absolutely right. We're not respecting it. You know, there's so many issues that we're not addressing. And the key one, I think, is we're not looking at the primary cause of this pollution that's affecting the, you know, the atmosphere is industrial nature of growth. Their whole economy based on growth. And of course this letter, I believe, addresses that.
Right.
There's a number of things it asks world leaders to do, which is to limit population growth, reassess the role of an economy rooted in growth. I mean, that's a major rethink of our whole rationale of industrial civilization. And this is why nothing's changing.
What's required is a totally different paradigm. I saw this week as well that some animals found at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, which is the very deepest part of the ocean, had plastic in them.
Oh, shocking. Plastic pollution is actually as bad as climate change in terms of a threat to biodiversity on this planet, yes. What's interesting is that the media are picking up on these stories now, because it might just be the change of government. We've got Greens and actually sitting in government now, and Labour is more. Jacinda Ardern actually announced climate change as being the nuclear-free moment for this generation. And of course, it's a little bit late to be saying that. The National government just sat on its hands. Greenhouse gases rose by an appalling 20% under their watch. So, you know, how do we address that?
We've had hunting in the news this week too, in terms of the devastating effects to a family after eating wild boar that had been shot by the man.
And isn't that interesting?
As we speak, they're
in a vegetative state. I think a couple of them I heard were coming around.
Oh, let's hope that they do.
But isn't that a shocking thing?
It is, you know, very shocking.
I mean, if that doesn't put people off eating meat, I really don't know what would.
Well, I mean, they're very different standards, the meat that most people consume, of course. But the whole idea of hunting is something that neither you or I are fond of, for obvious reasons. But hunting with bow and arrow is something that I didn't really think was common in New Zealand, but you found out to the contrary.
Yes, I've done a bit of research on it, just some rudimentary research, and I've found out that it's rising in popularity and it's a growing sport. There are holiday packages in the South Island being offered, you know, safaris with hunting bow and arrow, crossbows. There's a growing retail industry.
Why do they call it sport, Paul?
Well, you know, they call big game fishing sport too, and that's a horrific cruelty. But, I mean, I've always understood sport as being between two equally opposing teams or opponents. There's nothing equal about a person with a bow and arrow, high-tech bow and arrow, stalking a defenceless animal. And I mean, it breaks my heart, actually. It was drawn to my attention when I was working in a school the other day, and the teacher introduced me to a 14-year-old boy as being a crack shot with a bow and arrow. He'd won some awards or something, and I just got talking to him about it. And I said, "Do you shoot anything other than targets, you know, fearing the worst?" And, of course, he said, "Yes." He goes hunting with his dad and he shoots rabbits, he said. And
right.
then I said,
"Oh,
okay, anything else you shoot?" "Oh, yes, I shoot goats."
Wrong thing to say to me.
Wrong thing to say to me. An absolute avid goat lover. So I didn't, you know, you have to hold your tongue in those situations.
Yes, of course.
And so I didn't want to say anything, but what I did say was, "Isn't that cruel?" And his reaction was quite telling. He just immediately said, "Oh,
they're pests.
Yes, but they're pests." So it's sort of as though that admonishes any responsibility towards cruelty towards them.
Do you know if hunting with bow and arrow is regulated in New Zealand?
Well, no, it's not, and this is what I found out. There's absolutely no rules around it, and the retailer that I spoke to, and I won't give any names here, but I spoke to a major retailer of archery equipment, and even he was appalled by the whole situation. He said the laws are out of date, they're due for change, you know, they're due to be updated. He told me that a 12-year-old boy could go in if he had $2,000 and buy the latest high-tech bow and arrow. These are lethal weapons. I mean, this is what he said to me, is that it's just a matter of time before somebody will get killed with one.
So there must be some animal welfare issues regarding hunting with bows and arrows, and it must be a terrible death for an animal, and certainly not always a quick death. What animals are we talking about in general? You mentioned rabbits and goats.
Primarily deer, I think, is what people buy the bows and arrows for.
I mean,
it's a very primary thing to do, isn't it? It's primal. I guess that's the appeal of it, is to go out with your bow and arrow, like, and pretend you're a caveman or something, you know, living in some sort of prehistory idyllic state, hunting your food.
But if you're hunting with a bow and arrow and there are no regulations, I could myself go and try to kill an animal without any skill or expertise at all, no training.
That's right.
And the chances of my shooting them into the heart, or how do you kill them quickly?
Well, this is what I was told, actually, by a person in the industry, that this is a concern, is that it gives hunting a bad name, because we've got all these unskilled hunters, first-timers, newbies, they're called, going out with high-tech bows and arrows. That, you know, they range in price, and they're very accurate now. They're very accurate, but you have to still be skilled to use them. And you have to get close to the animal. You have to know how to stalk the animal to get a good shot to kill it instantly, which is what, you know, the best archers will claim. But it must be very, very rare. I don't know the figures on it, but I'd say that there'd be a high percentage of animals that would run off into the bush. And this is one of the things that this retailer told me that he didn't like. He was most uncomfortable with these people coming into this shop and bragging about how they'd gone out and wounded an animal and had run off.
Right.
And, of course, you can imagine the pain that animal's going through with an arrow through them.
And then maybe get an infection as well.
Yes, die of infection or bleed out. It could take days. It could take up to a week or something for that animal to die.
In the hunting codes, I glanced at them, and hunters are asked, if they do wound an animal, to pursue it and then quickly finish it so that it isn't suffering.
That is the code, apparently, that you're required to kill an animal.
And
you
do you
wound.
Think that many hunters would abide by that?
Well, there's the difficulty of an animal like a goat, for example, a feral goat, running off into the bush and not being able to find it. It would take a really conscientious hunter to actually track that animal down. I think maybe a deer, you probably could find a deer, but easier than a goat, but who knows?
Our animal welfare codes are very inadequate. Personally, I've been looking into birds who are kept in small cages as domestic pets in New Zealand. And as far as I can tell, there are no laws at all around that. You can bung a bird into a tiny cage so that it can't even stretch its wings. You can leave it in a room by itself in a dark hallway without any interaction. You can leave it there for years. They're very long-lived. And there's no regulation about that all. So they're lonely, they're bored, they begin to go a bit catatonic, or they self-mutilate. So birds in small cages keep me awake at night also. Mm. Obviously, you agree with me that our animal welfare codes are inadequate.
Well, I'm actually appalled finding out about this bow and arrow hunting. It really upsets me. I just know the pain that animals go through when they're wounded, and it's really time for a law change around these.
Yes. I mean, if you just stop and think about it, it's unregulated, so young children can do it. You can be drunk and do it, presumably. Mm. So how, when you're, you know, had a few beers, how are you going to have such precise aim that you'll give it a quick shot to the heart and kill it immediately?
Well, it amazes me that, you know, we need all these sort of licenses and training and things to, I don't know, to drive on the road or, but anybody can walk into a shop, get a modern high-tech crossbow or bow and arrow weapon and go out and kill an animal. What does that say about what the value we place on animal suffering? I don't think it puts any value on them whatsoever.
You know, bodies like the New Zealand Game Council and Fish and Game, they must have some kind of policies. Did you have a look at those?
Yes, I'm quite amazed. I'm quite interested in this whole thing about the New Zealand Game Animal Council. It's a statutory body set up in 2013. But looking at their mission statement, they say that they, for sustainable management of game animals and hunting for recreation, commerce and conservation. Now, it strikes me that there's an immediate contradiction there. This idea of managing herds of animals that are actually destructive to the New Zealand bush and environment and native animals and native plants, and yet managing them in terms of recreation. There's an inherent contradiction in that whole stance, I feel, which I just think is kind of slightly absurd. And then there's the other thing that they want to enhance the quality of game animal herds while remaining consistent with conservation values. That's another thing in their mission statement. They want to improve the acceptance of hunting as a safe and legitimate activity.
What does legitimate mean?
And that's a good question, isn't it? I mean, is it legitimate to let untrained people go out with a weapon that can actually cause so much suffering to an animal that it doesn't even bear thinking about? I mean, that's not legitimate at all. And to have these Yahoo types, which you do hear about, you hear about these bragging types that don't care for the animals one hoot, going out into the bush and doing this, it really upsets me, I'm afraid.
Have you ever seen Hunting Aotearoa on TV or any of the
I have. I've watched that program twice some years ago, and I've never been able to watch it
again.
Since. It's a horrific show. And then, of course, there's the new one that's running on Prime at the moment, and I've only seen the trailers for it with these guys dressed in military fatigues, you know, camouflage gear, going out with their big shotguns with their sights like snipers. And, you know, you really do have to wonder. They talk about the war on the animal. That is the first war, the war against the animal. And, of course, it's still going on, and it doesn't seem to stop. It's fundamental to the human condition to want to kill these other species, even to the point of maintaining their herds in order to go out and use them as recreation. It's a recreational thing. These safaris that they advertise talk about the quality of experience that you will have. I mean, it's not a quality of experience for the animal, is it?
Many hunters talk about conservation and they talk about management. They're managing and conserving species and the environment.
It's a contradiction, isn't it? They're managing species in order to have them there to hunt, and those species are invasive species and not natural to the New Zealand environment. And it's like hunters will often say, well, we're going out and we're killing pests, but I know for a fact that there are people in Raglan, for example, breeding pigs to release into the bush so that they can maintain those stocks of wild pigs
for
the hunters. So it's like
creating wetlands for duck shooters.
Yes, that's right.
Same thing. But of course the point is that if you wholesale slaughter animals like ducks or deer or whatever, what tends to happen is that the remaining individuals breed more. They've also got less competition, so there's more food around to eat. They get bigger, they breed more. And within a certain time, you're kind of back to where you were anyhow.
Very good point.
Cracklin' Rosie, get on board. We gonna ride till there ain't no more. We'll go taking it slow. Lord, don't you know, I'll have me a time with a poor man's lady. Hitching on a twilight train, ain't nothing here that I care to take along. Maybe a song to sing when I want. Don't need to say please to no man for a happy tune. Love my rosy child, you got the way to make me happy. You and me, we go in style. Crackling Rose, your store-bought woman, but you make me sing like a guitar humming. So hang on to me, girl, a song keeps running on.
Paul, this is been a really hard week for you. You lost your beloved goat companion, Rosie, and I spoke to you just hours after she died, and you were really cut up. I'd like to talk to you about Rosie, if that's okay, and I'd like to frame the discussion in terms of academic Dr. Anat Picks, her work Creaturely Poetics, and Anat Pick's starting point is vulnerability, which, of course, humans share with every other species. If we confine the discussion to mammals, though, we're all designed on a similar plan. We have brains and nervous systems. We have organs such as hearts, lungs, and livers and limbs as well. We feed our young with milk to sustain them in their early development. We all feel pain and fear. Our understanding to different degrees is limited. We have different levels of understanding. We all share an interest in our own lives and we wish to continue living. We form attachments to our families. Now there's kind of a short list there. And finally, irrevocably, we age and we die. Now, a week ago you painfully witnessed Rosie's vulnerability as she lay dying. Do you want to talk about this and any kind of feelings that you had?
It was certainly a painful experience, and it was a shocking experience that I went through. You know, I didn't intend her to feel such pain, and it just seemed incredibly sad because I'd got the vet over and the vet gave her a big painkiller, which, you know, she assures me that it maybe eased her pain somewhat, but she really should have been put down. I think it was a matter of timing. You know, she didn't look as bad when the vet was there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but by 9 o'clock at night, she was really in pain, and I tried to ring a 24-hour vet, couldn't get one. She was really badly in suffering, and I just had to nurse her through it, and by the time I did get somebody on the phone, you know, she pretty much died in my arms, and it was just terrible. I was really just cut up about it. Just this poor innocent animal going through that suffering was just horrific, and this animal that I loved, and you're right about Anat Pick. You know, I became acutely aware of the vulnerability of this creature that was that I had in my family for 3 years. You know, just this beautiful, innocent lovely, magnificent, regal goat, you know, with the most beautiful...
She was a white...
She was a Sanin goat,
Sanin, and just, milking goat,
she was the most gorgeous animal, just the lovely nature. And
I knew Rosie.
and she just had the greatest look about her. She actually looked like Picasso's sculpture that's in MoMA in New York, the great goat that he built out of found objects, but very similar kind of goat. I just adored her, and I didn't want her to see her suffering like that. And I think I did have a profound experience of the vulnerability of animals, that they are exactly like us. You know, they have this incredible vulnerability in their bodies, the pain that they go through. And this is the irony. I'd been doing the research on the bow and arrow hunting, and I couldn't help but think of all those animals out in the New Zealand bush that get shot with bows and arrows or guns or whatever and go off and die the most painful deaths.
All alone.
We've got to get more empathy towards these creatures that we share the planet with.
And we tend to make a real distinction, don't we, between our cats and dogs, our beloved pets, and wild animals or animals who are farmed. But we share creaturely vulnerability, don't we? And it's very easy to love a farm animal as well, as you well know with Rosie. I remember the first time I met Rosie and you introduced us. Paul, your eyes were shining.
Oh, look, she was just... I loved her. I loved her to bits. We'd rescued her from the pound. You know, she was a friend of Lindley's, actually, that had her, and she'd run away. She'd run away, and this friend of Lindley's was not keen to take her back for reasons I won't go into. Lindley actually rang me up and said, look, they're going to put her down this afternoon. And it was like that was like... We had about 2 hours. I thought, no, we can't let that happen. I hired a trailer. We went to their pound and got her, took her back to my place. You know, I just tethered her underneath my lemon tree for a couple of nights, thinking we'll find a home for her, we'll rehome her. And she was happy as Larry because my place was, you know, I don't tend to do a lot of gardening, so she had plenty to eat. You know, she became very comfortable there, and I decided just to keep her. And then we got a friend, 6 months later, we got a friend for her, Robert. My other goat, and they just became my two suburban goats.
And is Robert missing Rosie?
Oh, it's really sad. Mm. It's really sad. Mm. He knows something's up, and the weirdest thing is he's sitting on her grave.
Oh, goodness.
I just can't believe it. I've even taken photographs. To prove it to people, because people wouldn't believe me. He sits there on her grave. Now, I don't know, I said it to a friend who's had goats, and he said, oh, look, if there's a little mound of fresh dirt, they'll go for it. maybe that's it. But there is something really quite sad about the way he sits there. He never sat in that part of the garden before. And it does seem like he's looking down into the ground.
I'm sure there's something animals have. We greatly underestimate animals in just about every single way possible. Mm. Paul, that's our time. But this program is dedicated to your Rosie. And you chose a particular track to go out on. I'm going to record my final comments shortly, and then we'll have the track. But just tell us a little bit about it.
I had this record actually given to me some years ago. Mm-hmm. He's the great, you know, American writer who... Mm-hmm. Part of the Beat Generation that wrote novels. He wrote The Naked Lunch, famous for The Naked Lunch. And, well, he's written poems as well, and he's recorded them. He recorded a couple of albums of poetry before he died, set to music. And this particular one, Kill the Badger, really profound, the way it represents that sort of mentality, especially referencing the American gun-toting type that kills animals, of course, but I think it's relevant to here, very much so. Yeah.
It's quite edgy, but so a sobering message there for us. Okay, Paul, until next time, no doubt you'll be in the studio again before long.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, that's pretty much our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Just a couple of final thoughts on hunting. We can sanitize it all we like, but hunting is killing, and culling is also killing. It's giving ourselves the right to limit populations by using violence to towards individual sentient beings who have an interest in continuing their lives and are pretty much helpless against us, their chief predator. On a more cheerful note, this morning I looked at a video of a fisher cutting free a baby seal that had become hopelessly tangled in his fishing net. So as the fisher cut through strand after strand of the rope that was holding the animal motionless, the seal began to respond, and the fisher had to struggle to hold him still while he continued to free him. Anyhow, when he was cut free, the fisher picked up the baby and began patting and massaging it before gently releasing overboard. And when I saw that, I was reminded that that's what we should be doing, being compassionate and kind and helping other animals, not carrying out wholesale slaughter of them. Anyway, we'll go out on Paul's track by Edward S. Burroughs, Kill the Badger. Ka kite, until next time. Bye-bye.
Los Alamos ran school, where they later made the atom bomb and couldn't wait to drop it on the Yellow Peril. The boys are sitting on logs and rocks eating some sort of food. There's a stream at the end of a slope. The counselor was a southerner with a politician's look about him. He told us stories by the campfire, culled from the racist garbage of the insidious sex rumor. East is evil, west is good. Suddenly a badger erupts among the boys. Don't know why he did it, just playful, friendly, and inexperienced. Like the Aztec Indians who brought fruit down to the Spanish and got their hands cut off. So the counselor rushes for his saddlebag and gets out his 1911 Colt 45 auto and starts blasting at the badger, missing it with every shot at 6 feet. Finally, he puts his gun 3 inches from the badger's side and shoots. This time, the badger rolls down the slope into the stream. I can see the stricken animal, the sad, shrinking face, rolling down the slope, bleeding, dying. You see an animal, you kill it, don't you? It might have bitten one of the boys. The badger just wanted to romp and play, and he gets shot with a 45 government issue. Contact that. Identify with that. Feel that and ask yourself whose life is worth more. The badger or this evil piece of white shit. As Brian Geisen said, man is a bad animal.